Good morning. Good morning. It's a little overcast out there. It's, I think we're going to have some bad weather later in the day, so make sure you stay safe and all of that. Good morning. It's Tuesday morning. We have here in the studio Representative Chris Markey. Not really wearing his representative hat today so much as his attorney hat. Of course, for years, Chris was a prosecutor in the Bristol County District Attorney's Office, prosecuted a lot of crimes, including murders. And I brought him in, as we had him in during the Karen Reed trial, to talk about what was going on in that trial. I really am interested in this Brian Walsh trial, which has had a couple of twists lately. In part, I mean, really pretty girl, his wife, number of children involved, and he's kind of a character, right? And obviously everybody's innocent until proven guilty. Brian Walsh, son of a really well-known doctor up that way, and also got in some trouble with artwork he was trying to sell, whether it was real or not. I mean, it's just an interesting case. And now he has, right before the trial started, he changed from a not guilty plea to a guilty plea. So I find the trial to be very interesting. I know it's getting a lot of news coverage, and I figured some of you out there would like to talk about it, particularly with a former prosecutor who's currently a defense attorney, Chris Markey. Good morning, Mr. Markey. Representative Markey, how are you, my friend?
Good morning. I'm getting some feedback here and something. I don't know what.
What do you make of this trial so far?
Well, it's pretty one day into it.
Yeah.
But the opening statements were interesting to see how they how it is that the defense is really going to present itself. I thought the prosecutor Greg Connor had a very thorough opening, detailed of the highlights of what they're going to be able to prove, which is really what you want to be able to do and have a theme to it.
Right.
And then the defense attorney, I think it was good strategy to try to get rid of and fess up to the things that were overwhelmingly a problem.
Okay. Talk about that.
So, whether the disposal of the body is, there's so much evidence that it's like, why are we going to bog down on that?
Okay.
And what one could say is he's going to admit to lying on the witness stand. He's going to admit to disposing the bottle. He's going to admit to doing the Google searches on the phone, on the computer, on their kid's iPad. He's going to admit to going to Home Depot, to Lowe's, to buy all the equipment to dispose of the body. And they come up with this. So if he's telling the truth on all those things, he's also going to tell you the truth about the death.
Okay.
All right. So
that's the
theory.
There's
100 things he's going to tell you he lied about, but he's telling the truth now.
Okay.
And now the other part is he's going to tell the truth about the death, that he just walked up, nudged her, she fell off the bed, he didn't know what to do. It's a stretch, but
yes.
I think that's the best you're going to get out of that. And I think it's a good defense strategy to have that focus and try to make that argument at the end that, hey, he lied to the police early on. He's telling you the truth now. He told you the truth about the body. However, I would say that it exposes a lot.
Okay.
Right? So, for example, I think he says that Brian wrestled with the idea of a dead body, right? And that he didn't know what to do. Now, somewhere along the way in my closing as a prosecutor, I'd definitely get into the wrestling.
Okay.
Right? What did he wrestle with? Who did he wrestle with?
Right.
Use that word wrestle back and forth.
Okay.
Just to go back to that. The other thing that they're trying to do is, it's an unexplained sudden death.
Yes.
And they're going to say that there's medical doctors who will say, yeah, there's unexplained medical deaths, and that it's not that uncommon for that to happen. Well, the only way, again, as a prosecutor, what I would say is the only way you could say it falls into the category of an unexplained sudden death is that if you have an autopsy.
Right.
Right? Because that's a cause of death.
Right.
So how do you avoid an autopsy? You get rid of the body.
Yes.
So, I mean, in that respect, and then they say, oh, he loved his kids. He loved all these, all these things. Well, with modern technology, you'd want to know why the mother of your children died.
Right.
Right? Like, maybe she's prone to cancer and the kids could take tests. Yeah. Maybe there's prone to certain things and whether anything. But you would think that, geez, I'd really want to know what caused the death of my loved one if you love them so much and you love your children so much. So, I mean, look, the lawyer, I think, you know, what's the saying about, you can't shine a sneaker is probably the G version of it.
Right.
But you can't make
the lawyer's got a bad
salad
case, right?
Out of chicken.
Yeah.
And so
the defense attorney has a bad circumstances to work with.
Yeah.
Right.
It's incredibly difficult. There's motive that's compelling. He owed $400,000. His wife's got $1 million life insurance. He's about to go to the can. His kids and his wife are off into going to go to D.C. and live down there. She's going to walk away from that marriage.
Right.
That's pretty clear from the relationship she's had with people. He sees this as a desperate attempt, a pathetic attempt, an incoherent attempt, I guess is the best way to say it, to try to get out of that mess.
Yes.
And I just think that, you know, he's doing the best he can. I think it's a creative way to doing it. I think it's really his best option. And I think carrying it out, you'll see him. He's a very experienced lawyer. He's very good. And you'll see him stick with that theory throughout. And you'll see the prosecutor challenging all of those things through the witnesses saying, you know, talking about the time frame, talking about the technology. I would suspect that you're not going to see a ton of cross-examination of these witnesses, except for maybe a couple.
Okay.
Some to try to plant a seed of maybe her having a relationship with another man. So maybe the DC witnesses will have a little bit more cross-examination. But, you know, the guy from Home Depot, the guy from Lowe's, I don't think it's going to be, it's really contentious. So why bother? Okay. It's not going to be like in the Reed case where they're challenging all the technology, where someone was when they looked at certain things,
right.
All that. It's clear he admitted to all these things. He pled guilty to that. The question's going to be is really coming down to the medical examiner and answering questions as to what would happen. But there's DNA on a Tyrex bodysuit, work suit type thing. It has his DNA and her DNA on it that were found up in Everett or somewhere, Saugus, somewhere.
How do you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, he's saying he got rid of the body.
Right.
So I think that it's not going to be a case in which a lot of the evidence is going to be challenged, but it is going to get really critical when they start talking about the cause of death. And that's where the issue is.
Yes.
How did she die?
Right.
How did she die? And, you know, that's the issue, really, is how did she die? And,
My problem with, I mean, again, what does the guy do, right? The defense attorney and the defendant, how do they explain this? I mean, the instinct to cut up a body, right? In other words, the only thing I know about cutting up a body is from watching The Sopranos, right? I mean, it seems pretty gruesome. I would imagine, I mean, I've cut my finger, and I know the level of blood. So how does a person cut up the mother of his children, right? Unless you really, I mean, why wouldn't you just call an ambulance? I mean, the person's dead. You call an ambulance. You're not even sure if they're dead, right? It's really, but again, you're stuck with this set of circumstances because, whatever happened to her, right? I mean, it's just, as you point out from the beginning, we're speaking with Chris Markey, by the way, defense attorney, representative, former prosecutor, about the Brian Walsh case. It is a really hard circumstances for the defense attorney, right?
Oh, it is. I don't know what you can do other than what he's doing. It's going to be him being disciplined in that because there are certain things that he might want to challenge that he probably could have challenged. I mean, when you prepare for a case like this, I think you go through everything and you try to find the best place where you can fight. Right? Even during the Reed case, I'd always say, you know, like they seem to be fighting over every single issue. as opposed to being a sniper and looking at it and finding the one thing that their weakness and focusing in on that.
Right.
And I think this lawyer has done a tremendous job of that. He's focused on the one issue that they have to prove. But I don't know if in the end it's going to be able to overcome the compelling evidence of getting rid of the body and the odd circumstances of that.
Have you ever seen a trial like this here in the Commonwealth?
I don't think I've seen a case particularly like this. I mean, I've seen cases where people admit to killing somebody and then follow through with different behaviors.
Right.
Or people who try to dispose of a body and then fess up to it, but say it was an accident or it was a struggle or something to that effect.
Right.
Not that it's an unexplained sudden death. The only way to determine it was unexplained sudden death is by proving it was. And the only way you can prove it is by an autopsy. So I don't know.
I think
it's the only reason why it's unexplained.
Yes.
Is because he got rid of the body.
Right. Right. And as the prosecutor, they'll be circling back to that, I would assume, right?
Oh, I would assume so. Yeah.
I mean, you would if you were the prosecuting this case, right?
Yeah.
What would be your strategy as a prosecutor in this case?
No, I think you have to make sure you prove every element. I would try to talk about the time and the extent of things. So, you know, he lived in Cohasset. He had to drive to Hingham, I think it was, or some to go to the Home Depot. Might have been Rockland. But how long does it take? How long does it take to, you know, and then the video of how long he took to walk. Like, at any point does he just say, all right, enough is enough?
Right.
Like, take all those times where he is focused on accomplishing a goal and all the things he did to get to that goal. And why would he feel so obligated to get rid of her body?
Mm-hmm.
Unless he did something wrong.
Right.
And I would just focus on that, focus on the time, focus on the money he spent, focus on the lies that he continuously said.
Right.
And then the extent of which he really traveled Eastern Massachusetts to get rid of the body.
And what does that all point to, right?
Yeah.
Folks, we're going to take a break and then we'll be back. We have Representative Chris Markey here in the studio talking about the Brian Walsh trial, which just started the other day. And, it's been a very interesting trial so far just because the last-minute change in pleas and all of this stuff. And it's making national news. Once again, Massachusetts court system making national news. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Program. Good morning. It's Tuesday morning. I'm Chris McCarthy. You're the audience. We have Representative Chris Markey here in the studio. We're talking about it, the Brian Walsh murder trial, which is making big news all over the country, I think because it's so gruesome, so unique. And once again, we have a lot of people here in Massachusetts that are focused on the trial system ever since Karen Reed, and maybe even before that. So, Chris, how long do you think this trial is going to run? How long will it take, you think?
I don't think it's going to take too long. I think the witnesses are going to go by pretty quickly. I'd be surprised if it went 3 weeks. It'd probably be 2 weeks.
Okay.
I mean, the problem is there's so much evidence, right? You got, even if there's no cross-examination or very limited cross-examination, you still got a lot of direct examination from the from the Commonwealth.
This character, the defendant, and everyone's innocent until proven guilty, but for the son of a doctor, he's really gone bad. In other words, involved with a major art crime, fraudulent art, selling it, allegedly. And he was already, I think, facing federal time.
No, he was found guilty of
that. Oh, he was found guilty of that.
He was found guilty of the fraud. He was gonna get sentenced. He hadn't been sentenced, but he was gonna owe $400,000 in restitution. And at that point, he's convicted and just waiting for the sentence. And I think that's why you know things were happening so quickly. What he saw so quickly in his life, Everything coming to an end. His wife was leaving. His children were gonna leave. She's probably going to have another relationship. She wasn't going to be back in Massachusetts. And that was it, right? What else? And so, I mean, he definitely did not have a sophisticated criminal mind.
Okay.
Put it that way.
But we have no idea how the wife died.
No, and that's the issue.
Right.
I mean, she could have had a heart attack, but...
But if your wife has a heart attack, and I'm assuming this is what the prosecution's going to say, but if your wife has a heart attack, you call an ambulance.
Yeah.
You don't just chop her up.
Well, I assume the only way this is all going to get into evidence is from his testimony. And I can imagine the detail of that cross-examination by the prosecutor on that is going to be some time. That may take a day of a trial.
So you think Brian Walsh will take the stand?
I think he has to.
Okay, right? Explain that.
Because the only...
Because he doesn't have to. Under law, he could not testify.
Correct.
So people understand that, right?
From what you get from the evidence that was... Or from the opening statement... The defense attorney made certain proclamations. One of those is that he said he actually pushed her or nudged her and she fell off the bed.
I heard that part, yeah.
So how does that get into evidence? And the only way you can get things that go into, you can say things in an opening statement is if you have a reasonable belief that it's going to be proven at trial.
Oh, explain that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So you can't just say whatever you want.
Okay.
It's got to be based upon a reasonable belief that it's, first, it's admissible, and two, that it would be testified to in some fashion. And I don't think, and again, I'm not positive of it, I think the only statements that Mr. Walsh gave to the police prior to his arrest or even after his arrest were all lies.
Okay.
So if he's saying that this is the truth now.
Right.
There's only one witness alive who could testify to that, and that would have to be Walsh. So I could only assume he's going to testify. And he's got to put in, he's going to have to be able to answer why he drove all around eastern Massachusetts disposing of the body, why he bought all these things, why he researched all these things. But more importantly is he's going to be cross-examined on what did her body look like at the moment where he nudged her and she fell off the bed.
Okay.
What did he do when he went over to the floor? What did he do? Did he have his phone next to him? Did he have a landline next to him? Did he have a towel next to him? Did he have a pillow? Did he have anything that would indicate he's trying to comfort her?
Okay.
Right? Like all of those things that you'd think someone would do. And then... Why was he, you know, then you just go through all of the things. You did this, you did this, you did that. And talk about the times, again, that are significant, I think, because it's all deliberation. It's being prepared, going through that whole process. It'll be interesting to see how he answers these things. I think he's going to look like a fool.
Okay.
In the end. But, you know, it's his day in court. He's going to try to find something. He's looking at life without parole.
Yes.
He's going to say whatever he has to say. So.
I find it to be, what does a prosecutor do when you have this last minute change of plea? How much does that impact the prosecution?
I don't think it changes much.
Okay.
I think the only thing is changes really the length of the trial, because it's really that they're not being challenged on those things. So if you're not challenging on those issues, it should just kind of be pretty quick with the witnesses. It wouldn't be surprised if you hear from several witnesses that there's no cross-examination.
What about, we're speaking with Christopher Markey, by the way, defense attorney, former prosecutor here in Bristol County, and a state representative for Dartmouth. Will the kids have to testify, or is that out of bounds?
I don't think so. I don't think there's a need for it.
Okay.
I think you got some of the colleagues she had in D.C. who could testify to certain things, and then the people who were last saw her alive were the children. I think it was some guests at their house.
Okay. Is there? When do you think Walsh takes the stand? Because that is going to be amazing, I would think.
I think it's the last. He'll be the last witness.
Okay.
He wants to sit in the courtroom, right, and listen to what everyone has to say.
All right.
Try to focus on the little things, and go from there. But I think you're going to have they must have experts who are going to testify to this sudden unexplained death syndrome. Or
the defense,
yeah. So that would be I think if anything that would be kind of interesting of real substance in the case is watching the cross-examination of that. And then obviously watching the cross-examination of Walsh.
Yes. I mean, because does anybody believe she was just dead, like lying there? And then, I mean, I don't believe any of that. Do you?
No. Like,
I get it, the guy's innocent, but.
One could say, like, you know, some cultural thing or some religious thing or something that is, could explain away the stupidity. Right, the irrational behavior of an individual to say, oh, I thought this is what I had to do because
okay.
of whatever. But there isn't any like real logic to, I mean, it's one thing to bury a body.
Yes.
It's another thing to dismember a body and put in different places.
Right.
And without having a real conscience or an innocent conscience.
Yes. I mean, I'm trying hard. In other words, this is so absurd to me, right, that it borders on humorous, but obviously it's not humorous because there's a dead woman, a mother of children involved. But, I mean, just picturing that guy because, you know, sawing a body because there's a hacksaw in evidence.
Yeah. I mean, he searched it. He researched everything after the fact. But it's hard to explain, but again, there is no body. I don't think that means that there's reasonable doubt because the consciousness of guilt of disposing the body in the manner in which he disposed the body is pretty compelling.
We have Representative Chris Markey here in the studio talking about the Brian Walsh case up in Cohasset. Chris, if you're the district attorney, how do you select your prosecutor to do this trial? What do you look for in an assistant district attorney to prosecute this case?
One of the big things is experience.
Okay.
You hear people talk about the medical field. It's a medical practice or a legal practice. And it's someone who's practiced a lot, right? Okay. I mean, the idea that you go to law school and all of a sudden you're a great lawyer.
I agree.
Is a joke.
Yes.
You gotta get up, take your at-bats. I mean, even in the professional baseball, those guys are there 2 hours early. They're taking batting practice. They're taking fielding practice. They go to practice every day. So it's who's got a ton of experience, who's seen everything, and then also who has the ability to really speak passionately about something like this. I mean, I think it's pretty overwhelming evidence, but you need to put in perspective and be disciplined on it. And I think that comes from experience.
We have Chris Markey here in the studio talking about the Brian Walsh murder trial. We had him in for the Karen Reed trial a couple of times, actually. It was a couple trials. So how important is to have, because she's not there, obviously, the pictures of her, do you paint a picture of her as a mom, as a sympathetic figure? In other words, what does the prosecution have to put on to make this seem real? Because
I don't think there's much they have to do in regard to the, I mean, first off, it's somewhat inappropriate to try to go on the heartstrings of many people, you know, during a jury.
Okay.
You got to stick with the facts.
Okay.
Right? You're not supposed to make a decision on emotion, and the judge will instruct the jurors on that.
Okay.
But there are subtle things you can do. You know, there'll be pictures of her with her children.
Yes.
And then they'll have the colleague come in and go, oh, do you recognize this woman? Yes, I do. Who is it? It's Anna. And who's she with? Oh, these are her three children.
Okay.
And I remember when they took that picture, it was in D.C. or it was somewhere.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. You know, how was their relationship? Oh, it was great. And all of those things. They'll talk about all of that at some point during the trial. Usually, when you have a trial like this, it'd probably be on bookends. You'll hear about the people who worked with her,
okay,
who had a relationship with her, the first guy who called the police, all that stuff at the beginning. And then at the end, you'll try to loop it back and have, again, someone who is more emotionally attached to the victim.
What about people talking about what I would assume be the deterioration of their relationship? Is that something you can get into? In other words, Brian Walsh and his wife are having problems. Can you get that in, or how do you get that in?
Yeah, I don't think the defense attorney really wants it in.
No, I get right? that, right. But the prosecutor.
But the prosecutor would get it in, and then, you know, the defense, you know, and maybe try to put in the real perspective of everything. And, you know, at the end of the day, even if she was having an affair, you know, the death penalty is not the punishment for infidelity.
Right.
So,
well, not here anyway.
No, but, you know, like, so the reality is it just maybe paint a picture of the sense of his state of mind at
right.
that particular time.
508-996-0. I've got some people on hold who want to speak with Chris Markey about the Walsh trial for murder. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, Chris and Chris, how you doing?
Good. Good. How you doing?
You know, when this first came up, I kind of looked into it, and I don't know, Chris Markey, if you knew that Anna Walsh was married previously to a guy named Mark Knipp, or Kip, K-N-I-P-P, and she divorced in 2014, but in February of 2013, she has pictures of her out, you know, with Brian, her current or husband, Brian Walsh, and they were making out and kissing in the photos. I think I'm not justifying anything by saying this. I just think it's interesting that she jumps from relationship to relationship. And obviously this was the wrong guy to have a relationship with because of what happened. But moved to the country, dual citizenship from Serbia, real estate in the D.C. area. That's big money. And I don't know. I just thought that was weird that she did the same MO, which was married to somebody else, dating somebody before she's divorced, then divorced, did it again with Brian Walsh. So I don't know, just one of those things.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah. So thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Like I said, you know, even if she's the death penalty is not the punishment for infidelity,
right.
And that's there's no excuse for it.
Right.
So, I there's nothing else to say other than that.
Yeah. In other words, they can't. He's not innocent because she's not innocent, right?
Yeah.
In other words, I mean, just because she's
You don't know the relationship she was in previously.
Right.
You don't know the circumstances of it.
Does that get into this?
No, I don't. Who's going to bring it in? Attorney who's going to have it as a motive now, increase the motive and highlight
go.
The motive? No, they're never going to put that in.
Okay.
So, and does the Commonwealth want to put it in? No. Not really.
Right.
So I don't see it as being an issue in the case.
508-996-05. We're going to take a quick break and then I'll be back. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
Yep.
Appreciate it, Chris. All right, guys, that's Chris Markey joining me here this morning. I'm going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Talk about things that nobody can.
welcome back to the program. Talk about the Brian Walsh murder case up there in Cohasset. Chris had to step out because he had other business he had to take care of this morning, and I knew that when he came over. But the case is very gruesome, obviously. What I am interested in seeing is the cross-examination and the defense examination of Brian Walsh. I think that's what we're all kind of waiting for, right? To see a person who, look, I get it. They are innocent until proven guilty. But boy, the case does not look good for that man, right? And obviously, I feel bad for his wife. I didn't know her, but I feel bad for any human being. She's in the prime of her life. And for her, the children. And quite frankly, as much as I think he did it, I feel bad for him. If you can feel bad for somebody who commits what you believe to be a heinous crime, the fact that he is going to take the stand and try to perpetuate the story, you know, that he just found her dead and his instincts were not to call an ambulance, not to call the police, not to call some first responder to get over there. And not preserve himself, but to save her life, right? I mean, until somebody's pronounced dead, they're not dead. And that you try to save them. Chris is back here in the studio with us now. That is going to be the interesting part, Chris, to me anyway, is watching this guy try to perpetuate the story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the case that you want to watch that. I
think right.
Everything kind of will be super interesting at the end of it. This will be just methodical going through all the evidence so that at the end of the case, Greg Connor can go through everything and say, think about, you know, his 18-minute drive from his house to Home Depot. Think about him getting into his car, turning on the ignition, backing out of his driveway, driving in, stopping at all the stoplights. Like, he wasn't reckless. He wasn't thoughtless. Right. He was so deliberate in setting forth the path to getting rid of that body to hide the evidence. He walked in smooth, like, you know, and they'll have the video of him. His encounter with the clerk, right? Nothing seemed to bother him. It was
okay.
Just matter of fact, like any other customer going in, walking out with his bags.
Right.
Taking his bags and putting them into the trunk. Then waiting a particular time to hide it, doing it at night.
Right.
All of those things. And he'll be able to go through that process and that deliberation and argue that. So that's what this first part of the trial will be. And then the last part will be, do you really believe? I mean, ultimately, the question to their expert who says, oh, it's a sudden unexplained death is, you don't know if it's a sudden unexplained
right.
death, do you?
Right.
You didn't have an autopsy. You
right.
didn't have the body, right? So, you know, you go through all of those steps to get to that point. And then you talk about at the end the credibility of a witness, you know, how much is the expert getting paid? You go through all of that stuff in your argument.
We have Representative Chris Markey here. Of course, he was a prosecutor in the Bristol County District Attorney's Office for a number of years, defense attorney currently. And we're talking about the Brian Walsh trial. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Hey, good morning, Chris and Chris.
Yes, sir.
Long time, first time. I seem to recall from the Karen Reed case, the lead investigator, Michael Proctor, was involved to some degree in this case. Do either one of you know if that's true? And if it is, would that be a path of attack for the defense?
Go ahead, Chris.
I believe Proctor was involved in it. I don't know if he was essential to it. I don't know if he was the lead investigator, but there's ways around putting him on the witness stand. There's typically when they're doing these investigations, there's always a local police officer and a state police officer doing like in a partnership with it. And that typically happens. And you heard at least yesterday in the opening statement that the prosecutor focused on the Cohasset police officers. I think it was Lavasser or somebody like that.
Okay.
And making sure that he highlighted who the officer was who was going to be testifying. So I would assume that all the lies he had, the interviews he had, Proctor may have been in there, but there's also another police officer who's in there, and that police officer would do it, testify. So there's ways around it. I don't think it's a big issue.
Okay.
It doesn't go to the heart of a big police corruption thing. The guy admits to getting rid of the body and doing all the things that potentially could be in conflict.
Yeah, Proctor, he's the gift that keeps on giving, apparently, here in Massachusetts. So we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back talking about the Brian Walsh trial with Chris Markey, who's a former prosecutor and currently a defense attorney. I find the case to be fascinating, and I think there's going to be a lot to look forward to, if that's a way to put it, Brian Walsh's testimony, because as Chris told us, what we understand is he's going to have to testify. So we'll be right back, folks. Stick around. Representative Chris Markey here in the studio. We're talking about the Brian Walsh murder trial that's happening here in Massachusetts. It's really garnered national attention, but I think the most attention is yet to come because, as Chris was alluding to, Walsh has to testify.
I think he has to. I don't see how he can get that information in without having someone with firsthand knowledge of the things that the defense attorney said.
Right.
And quite frankly, I don't think anyone could believe the Commonwealth didn't meet its burden unless they find somebody who believes what he says. So I think he needs to tell his story in the case. And I think the only way to get that story in is from his mouth.
So you've been involved in the selection of jurors. What does the prosecutor look for in a juror in this case?
Well,
just rational people.
Well, we all have our prejudices, right?
Yes.
No matter what anyone says, you always have your prejudices when you come to that. And not talking about race, but like what book someone's reading, right?
Yes.
Like when you're sizing up a juror, is it a guy with a backpack? Is it an engineer? Is it a guy who lives in an affluent area? Is it someone who comes from a poor area? Is it someone who has a ponytail? You know, all these things go through your mind of, hey, do I feel comfortable talking in front of these people and can I do that?
Okay.
And so what I traditionally look to is, I mean, my number one, anyone who's dressed in a suit pretty much is going to get on.
Okay.
Because then they respect the system. They respect all that.
They dress up the court.
As far as clothing goes, that's what I would want. As far as profession, anyone who's an emergency room nurse.
Okay.
They see the best in life and the worst in life.
Yes.
They know they can see through the BS and people lie to them all the time. They know how to size up somebody. So a nurse would definitely be one. In this case, I would think when I did the child abuse cases, I never wanted an engineer, in that category, because they're black and white. And those cases are, the conduct of the victim is very difficult to understand and appreciate and have that. So they're like, well, you should have done this. You should have done that. You should have done this.
Right.
And they didn't do that.
Right.
Here, this is a case where I think you would want some tech geek or engineer educated person where their thought process is focused on what should have happened,
right?
And all of those things. And then understanding the technology, I think, is a good thing. So those are the types of people I would necessarily want. I probably would not want a social worker on this.
No.
Or some, you know, PhD in psychology or something like that, where they think they can make a name for themselves somewhere along the line because they think this guy's got some weird thing going on. But those are kind of my, again, you don't have a lot of time to size up people. So you're taking those those prejudices from whether you, what town you're from, what you're wearing for clothes, what books you're reading, that type of thing.
Chris, I want to thank you for coming in and sharing your expertise with us here this morning about the Brian Walsh trial and trials in general. Chris, thanks so much.
You got it. Anytime.
Folks, all right, I want you to stick around. We're going to do a little news here, a little local news, a little national news, and then we'll do open phones in the next hour.